This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off a select mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. Slack is a messaging app which brings together all your team's communication into one place, making work simpler and more productive. Go to slack.com to learn more. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Thrid. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
How are you?
All right. What's the matter? I don't know. Paul. I don't like who this Paul is today. One of those days, yeah. Huh? We're gonna make sure.
I feel like I'm hungover or sick or something.
Do you really?
It's weird.
Yeah. Last night, Andrew was a naughty boy, and I was out very late on a Monday night, out of all nights. I didn't even walk into my house till 1 o'clock in the morning. I was a very bad boy. Yeah. I was not hungover, though, but I did drink a ton last night. I was entertaining some clients.
So unlike you.
Yeah. Entertaining. That's what I tell people now. People are like, oh, well, you got home so late. I go, well, I was entertaining clients. By clients, I mean my bartender and the drunk guy next to me. I was entertaining for the night. No, it was a busy work night. So I was out late last night, and I do want to talk to you about a couple things. I want to talk about Microsoft. I want to talk about Redstone 4. I want to talk about what's going on with this update that some people have gotten and most have not. Did you get the spring update? Not your main machine, but like your other machines.
Yeah, so no one is really getting it unless they're trying to get it.
Okay.
I did go and get it, and then because of what happened, I had to go and get it again. But yeah, okay. I did.
Which we'll talk about that. Actually, you know what? Let's start off with that. So what happened exactly? I was going to go into something else, but I really want to know about this because it was a little bit of controversy last week over this.
Yep. Basically, back at the end of March, Microsoft created the build that was going to become the final version of Windows 10 version 1803. And then they went through the typical process of pushing it through the different development rings to make sure it was passing muster, which it did. And then they found a problem or some problems. We don't really know exactly. They've been sort of vague on it, but some problems that they didn't like, some reliability issues, some blue screen type stuff. And typically what happens after they declare a build like this to be what used to be called RTM, the way you fix that is you release a cumulative update, which is something that people get through Windows Update. So if you were to upgrade to this version of Windows 10, Windows Update would grab this right away and you'd be updated. And oddly enough, they did release a cumulative update for the original RTM build. And that's what it did. It fixed reliability issues.
So Redstone 4, the last release was what? 17133, right?
Yeah, that was the original final.
That was the original, that was the original final broke.
Now the way that, like, when you upgrade these things, you kind of increment the minor part of the build number. I'm going to get these numbers wrong, but it's like 17133.1 was the original, and then it was like .17 was the next one, and then they went to 17134 for some reason. They kind of explained it. They were like, "Look, you know, it's not out yet anyway, so we could just increment the build." But I feel like we're not getting the full story because they've never really done that before. There's no reason to do it. The reason they kind of stated publicly doesn't make a lot of sense vis-a-vis just doing it the old way. I don't quite get the point of it, but the problem for me is that with every version of Windows 10 that comes down the pike, I republish a tip that I have, which is for people who are in the Insider program. There's what I call a magic window of time, where a version of Windows 10 is completed and they haven't yet released the first build of the next version to the fast ring people on the Insider program. During that time, what you can do is disenroll your PC from the Insider program without any penalty. Yeah. And then you can just get on the normal release schedule.
That's what I did a couple months ago.
Well, But the corollary to this is the other thing you can do is if you know a version of Windows has been completed and you want to go grab it right now, you can also use the other side of that window, which is to enroll your PC into the Insider program, download that build, and then disenroll your PC from the Insider program. I did that to about probably at least eight computers, about 2 weeks ago because this thing was done. If they had just released a cumulative update to that build, I wouldn't have to do a thing. All of my computers would get that normally. There's nothing special to do. But because they decided to increment the build, again, in an unprecedented move, they've never done this before, I had to go, and I have not done this for all of them. I've only done four or five so far, but I will have to go to every one of those computers, and I have to do it in a specified period of time because remember, at some point, they're going to get the roller coaster going again. The train or whatever. I have to re-enroll every PC in the Insider program, reboot, download and install the build and reboot, disenroll the PC from the Insider program and reboot. I have to do that to all those computers. So I've done four or five. It's kind of a pain in the butt because if they had just done things normally, that would never be necessary. So they've kind of taken a mistake and they've just amplified it for people like me who have done what I just described. So it's just,
what a pain in the butt, right? Total pain in the butt. Hassle. Yeah. What was the exact? I know that there were blue screening, but did they say the cause of what hardware was being affected by this and what devices were being affected by this? Because it was pretty sporadic.
Week ago Monday, I had found out they were delaying the final release, and I wrote a post that I never posted. And in that post, I mentioned the fact that I had actually seen blue screen of death issues on two PCs that had been upgraded to the final build.
Oh, interesting.
Thought that was kind of interesting. So yesterday in the very short post, they mention that they discovered some reliability issues that they wanted to fix. In certain cases, these issues could have led to a higher percentage of blue screens of death on PCs. So instead of creating a cumulative update package to service the issues, we decided to create a new build with the fixes included. With no explanation of why, right? Yeah. In other words, the cumulative update would have fixed the problem easily. I suppose, maybe what they're not saying is that people could have seen these blue screens before they could get the fixes installed, maybe. I they don't really explain how prevalent they were.
You know, I have to tell you,
it's a unique thing that they've done.
It's a very unique issue, and it's a very unique thing that they've done. For the most part, I've been pretty good with these builds. I've always upgraded on, as it's come out, I forced the upgrades. You know, I've done the whole thing, but I've never had issues. I did not do this one, and I'm kind of glad I didn't upgrade even, any of my machines.
So if you're in the Insider program, the blue screen of death becomes a green screen of death. And last night, one of the computers that I had to re-upgrade to the final version actually green screened of death on me during the upgrade process, the offline upgrade part of it. So that was kind of scary because this is something that had happened to me before. I remember I mentioned there was two computers that had blue screen issues. Interesting. I don't remember if that was one of the two. Now that I'm thinking about it. But anyway, when that happened, I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, maybe I'm not going to be able to upgrade this thing. Like, what if I have to go back to scratch? But the second pass, it had to re-download the whole thing again. It took forever, but for whatever reason, on the second pass, it worked fine.
Yeah, I see these comments, I see it on Therat.com and I see it on other websites where people talk about reliability issues and problems. Mm-hmm. I abandoned the Insider program a couple months ago, and I have not experienced a lot of this. So I'm curious if I would have had these problems if I stayed in.
Yeah. It's hard to say.
Like I have my Spectre, my HP is, that was always on the Insider program, but I started using it more as my everyday computer. I just didn't want to risk it when, being on a build that may have stability problems and, who knows what could happen. So I chose not to, I opted out of it when I blew it away and I did a fresh install. But I'm curious, how many people were really affected by this problem? And, was it a panic situation for them when they you know, had to.
Well, like I said, they've never done this before. And the other thing that was supposed to happen was a week ago today, they were going to start deploying the final build out to the public. And so a week passed with not a word from Microsoft about what had happened. The post they had yesterday, which is about 150 words long, only addresses very vaguely the notion that they had discovered, like I said, a reliability problem or problems of some kind. I don't think we're ever going to find out, you know, how prevalent this could have been, but I, for whatever it's worth, I mean, I've been using the Insider program on various PCs ever since the beginning. I don't normally have rampant reliability issues. This last version of Windows, I really didn't test too much, which is unusual for me. But part of it was because I was working on the book, and the book was focusing on the previous version. I wanted to get that done first.
Yeah.
But now that I've switched the book over to this next version, you know, that's why I pushed all the computers I'm using to that version, because I want everything to be consistent as I'm writing the book, you know.
Redstone 5 is, you know, getting, you know, information's now starting to come out more and more and more about that, which I do want to talk to you about Redstone 5.
Yeah.
Before we continue, I want to take a moment and thank our great sponsor, Netscasper. This episode is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products and create an unbelievable, comfortable sleep experience. One night at a time, you get $50 off towards a select mattress purchase by going to Casper.com/Andrew and entering the promo code Andrew when you check out. I like to put my personal spin on these when I talk about it. That's because I sleep on a Casper mattress, and I was with my boss and one of my good friends at work, and we were talking about, you know, they sit there and they do my live reads pretty much, right? They pull up my videos and they start doing my live reads. And I've actually sold about 3 Casper mattresses by just talking about it. And as my boss is mocking me and doing the whole radio shtick, he looks, he's like, "What's the wave?" And it's the premium lineup, you know, it's the other mattress. Casper now has a plethora of mattresses that they provide you with. And the Wave is another mattress that they have. And I started looking into it. I'm like, man, I kind of want to look into this one. So I may buy a new mattress now. And, you know, Casper was gracious enough to send the one that I have right now. But now I'm looking to get another one, Paul. And I sold myself a mattress at the end of the day. Guys, if you're looking to purchase a new mattress, here's a great thing. 100-day sleep guarantee. You get with Casper, you could sleep on it, you know, because you can't make this decision from a 20-minute, you know, lay on a mattress, essentially. What do you end up doing with those big box guys? You go there, you lay on it for like 5-10 minutes, and you decide what you're buying. That's crazy, if you think about it. Considering the fact that we, you know, 1/3 of our lives is spent on a mattress, it's important that we truly get, you know, the experience, and we know what the mattress is. That's why Casper gives you 100 nights to try it out. This is a great offer. Also, save an additional $50 towards a select mattress purchase by going to Casper.com/Andrew and entering the promo code Andrew when you check out. I want to thank our great friends at Casper for continuing to support the show. So, the future of Windows, Paul. Let's start off with that. Build is coming up. And I got an email from a guy, and he was asking me, he goes, you know, it's so interesting the path we've taken with OS updates. You know, Apple still continues to rename their operating system every time. And, you know, you got, you know, High Sierra, Sierra, whatever. You're still getting some sort of name. But they do a very good job at telling you why. And this is a Windows user, not a Mac guy. So maybe he is coming from a side that, you know, the fear of missing out, maybe. Like, he's missing out on this great experience on the Apple side, which it's not that great right now. But he wrote this email, and he was explaining how, you know, Apple does do a phenomenal job at telling you the operating system and all the great new features. But over the last 2 years, Microsoft has kind of gone into this, you know, gradual update. Obviously, we had the creators update that concentrated more on that. But it's like a secondary thing for a lot of people. Right? It's the messaging is secondary. We know it's Windows and we know it's getting an update, but are there updates? Are the updates not as grand as it should be with the, you know, with the way that they announce it?
I guess there are updates, and then there are updates. You know,
like, so we know that there are updates, right? We know that there are updates, but yeah, when you buy a computer, it's Windows 10. You don't know,
right?
Nobody knows really what it would.
Most people just don't care, you know. And the truth is, you could bring up the first version of Windows 10, bring up the newest one right next to it, and the differences are subtle, you know. I would say that the previous three feature updates, as they call them, Windows 10 versions, were fairly significant upgrades. This latest one, the one that's coming out any time now, the one that was just delayed a little bit, is a fairly minor update.
Yeah.
There's only really one major new feature, which most people won't see or use. And then there are the expected updates across the board. You know, lots of good stuff in Edge, lots of changes in Cortana, and then a little UI tweaks everywhere. There's more of the Fluent design language, which, you know, is still fairly inconsistent, frankly, but I kind of like it. I mean, I don't think it's a big deal, but I like it.
I think they've always, it's always been a gradual, you know, quality increase, obviously, with every version that they put out. It's always a positive, and for the most part, obviously, they'll have some problems, but it's a climb towards the right direction. But is there a messaging problem within the company when it comes to what you're using and what features are different from another one?
Yep. This past version, I think what you're alluding to is that this version of Windows 10 that's about to come out is unique among all the versions because Microsoft has never really discussed it. A year ago at last year's build, they talked about all these features that were going to be in the Fall Creators update, and then they delayed or canceled all of them except for one. And there's a lot of disappointment about that. And so for the one after that, which is this one, the current one, the April update or whatever they're going to call it, is they've never talked about it. Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously when there's a new build to the Insider Preview program, they release a blog post that says, here are the new features in this build. But what they haven't done is gone out to reviewers and said, here's the reviewer's guide. Here's the stuff we think is important. Here are the big bucket items on the list. Oh, and by the way, here's the name. You know, they've never said the name, which is not the Spring Creators update, but it will be something else. So it's been a little goofy along those lines. The thing that's kind of the weird side story to this is you were kind of comparing it to Apple and High Sierra. And I think most people who are Apple fans or use a Mac would agree that High Sierra, which I believe is the name of the latest one, is not a particularly big upgrade over the previous version. That probably why they use that name, because it's like Sierra, you know, it's very similar.
Just higher.
yeah, a little more, you know. Yeah. It's like Sierra. It's a little different, which is fine. This thing is a legacy desktop platform. I don't think we're at the point where we should be adding tons of major change anymore. And
to
Windows or the Mac. I mean, they're both in the same position. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing that this release doesn't have any big bang stuff. I almost feel like Microsoft is somewhat embarrassed by this. And of course, tied to it is all of the big changes structurally that have just happened at Microsoft, where Terry Myerson has been dismissed. Nobody representing Windows is present on the senior leadership team anymore. And Windows development itself is being split between different parts of the company. There is no Windows team anymore. It's kind of a weird period of time. And of course, now we have the announcement just yesterday that Microsoft is working on a Linux-based OS that they will distribute, not for end users. It's not like a Linux desktop, but for these little IoT devices. You know, where it's kind of a different world all of a sudden. And so you mentioned build. Like, you know, this is something we've been chanting almost for the past couple of months. Wait till build, because, you know, we're looking for answers and there are a lot of questions. And I think some of those questions will be answered at build. The truth is some of them won't. And we still have other events and other times throughout the year where I think Microsoft's going to speak up and say, hey, look, things have changed again, or we finally sussed this out and we figured out how we're going to do things or whatever it is. So I think we'll hear part of it at Build. I'm sure they will talk about the next version of Windows there, the version for the fall.
See, I fear that we're going to get very little about the next version of Windows, but we're going to get a whole lot about progressive web apps.
So My understanding is that we're going to hear a little bit about Windows and even less about progressive web apps.
Oh, interesting.
And that the majority of it is going to be cloud plus AI plus IoT. It's going to be this next wave stuff. So
that's interesting, considering the fact that progressive web apps are the future of, you know, desktop-based applications on Windows.
But they're a future that they're a future for something that Microsoft only plays a very small role in, right? When you kind of think about it, I sort of say something like this a lot, but you know, when Windows and PCs were the personal computing experience that we had, Microsoft was everything in this world, right? They dominated it. They were 95% of the installed base. Today they're in single digit or very, very low double digit usage share compared to the rest of the world using phones and tablets and other devices. So progressive web apps is important for sure. It's important to Windows, such as it is, right? But in the scope of things for Microsoft's future, Windows is not a big part of it. So I'm glad they're doing the work. I'm glad it's there. Me as an individual, I think us as people listening to this or whatever, are probably very much attuned to what's happening here and are interested in it at the very least. But as far as like a big strategic direction for Microsoft, it's not the future, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Look, there are a billion plus and possibly billions of people using Windows today on PCs. Those people are not going away anytime soon, especially in businesses. There is an audience there. They will benefit from PWAs. There's no doubt about it. But as far as Microsoft, the company, and what their strategy is and where they're putting their focus, it's that stuff I just said, the cloud, AI, IoT. It's the intelligent cloud and intelligent edge is the way they put it.
Yeah, I mean, IoT obviously is a major, major focus for them and almost everybody at this point, right? It's the future of technology and where every company is headed, and everybody wants to play a major part in this.
And Microsoft put some interesting, they put a number to it. So to kind of put that number in perspective first, let's look at, you know, what's going on in the world, right? So every year now, PC makers sell probably less than, but let's say about 250 million computers. Hardware device makers sell about one, I don't know if it's 1.5 or 2 billion phones every year. So that market is, let's say, six times as big as the PC from a run rate perspective. The market for IoT devices today is about 9 billion units per year. So it dwarfs the smartphone market already. But the thing that's changing is that these devices, they call them like microcontroller units or whatever, these like tiny little system on a chip where it's literally like a single die essentially that has an entire computer on it. So it's, you know, the CPU and GPU there's no GPU, but the CPU, let's say the CPU cores, there is RAM, there is storage, there's connectivity, in this case through Wi-Fi, there's I/O, and there's a core that's just for applications. So things can run on it. It has the AI part is there, you know, the notion that you can run things on it. It is a computer. It's a little tiny computer. This is going to transform this market in a big way. So these kind of connected MCUs, if you will, like because they're internet connected, are what's going to define this next wave. And I think that 9 billion number, not only does it go up, but it gets smarter. You know, and so obviously a core part of Microsoft's push here is security. One of the issues with all these IoT devices out in the world is that what happens when they get hacked by the Russians or whatever. And, you know, Microsoft has designed the platform to prevent that kind of thing, but also to allow them to be updated and you know, all that kind of good stuff. So I think I've said this before, and I'll just try to be quick about it. But, you know, whatever the size of the PC market ever was, we had one computer, one person. Actually, in many cases, we had multiple people on one computer. Among the many changes as we go to a phone is we've established a one-to-one relationship. No one's sharing a phone with anyone else. You may hand it to your kid to play a game when you're eating dinner, but I mean, everyone has their own phone and you have one phone. So that market by definition has a ceiling. There are X number of people in the world that can all have one phone. That's the market. It's never getting bigger than that. There's no case where someone needs, I mean, literally, not literally, but for the most part, nobody needs two phones.
But you know with what, IoT Paul, device, I need two phones.
Yeah. I can see five phones in front of me right now, but
I have three. Yeah. But
we're idiots, but, no, we do what we do. I mean, this is obviously there are exceptions. There are people who still have like a work phone and a personal phone for some reason or whatever, but I don't mean literally, but for the most part, a phone is a one-to-one relationship. You know, the IoT thing is fascinating because just sitting in this room, there could be a dozen or more sensors and little MCUs and devices and whatever that are interacting with me and are ambient and are kind of aware of my presence, are going to perk up when I say things, are going to proactively give me information because they know that I'm here. And that's just this one room. Then I go out into the house, I go into my car, I drive to my workplace. All of those places and the places in between, the places that are public spaces, the planes and whatever, are going to have these things everywhere. There's not going to be a device sold in the future that doesn't have this thing in it, you know? Yeah. And this is Microsoft's push. They want to be part of it. They want to, you know, be a big part of it. And so we'll see.
I was thinking about
you know,
this.
It's early days.
You know, if you really think about it, right, we're so used to, like, you use an Android, and this battery is going to drive me nuts. It's in the wall. I gotta into the wall. You're going to see me just lose my mind one day and just take a hammer to this thing and just bust it open.
Do it with a hammer, not with your fist.
Head first.
Don't do it.
Wow, HP just messaged me. Interesting. They're sending me a 13X360. 360X? Mm-hmm. Which Spectre. One is that? The Spectre, yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, nice. We'll talk about it when
angular
I get it.
New styling and whatnot.
Yeah, the new one. Do you have one?
Mm-hmm.
You love it? You do not? Ooh, maybe I'll beat you to this.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
Yeah, I'll talk about it in a couple minutes. But I was thinking about this. Like, you know, I have an Android phone and I got an iPhone and Google does a way better job at knowing where you are and what you're doing and what your interests are. Funny how that works, right? Yesterday I got an alert.
Creepy, eerie capacity to know everything about you.
But
we've all had that moment.
It's so creepy that you kind of like, you know what, that was useful. I'm okay with it. It told me that there was flooding at the E station. I was taking the E train and there was flooding and that it knew that I would be getting on it around 4:45. Like I got an alert on my phone.
That's useful, right? In other words,
beyond useful. And I thought about, I'm like, you know what's funny? I've been sitting in front of a computer the entire day. My laptop is the dumbest device that I use all day.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I was just so I get in the car and I drive to Boston, and it's a 5-hour drive if there's no traffic. Here's a hint: there is never no traffic, but whatever. You know, in the old days, you kind of pulled out a map. You're like, I'm going to take I-95. This is the way we go, whatever. Now you use Google Maps because obviously it has up-to-date information about conditions. It could be an accident, traffic, whatever it might be. It's really intelligent about it. But what's interesting about this is that in the case of Google Maps, you're explicitly using this thing. You've said, I'm going to start here and I'm going to go there. I want to do it in the most efficient way possible. So it will chirp in every once in a while and say, hey, there's a slowdown ahead. If you take this little exit, you'll save 5 minutes and you can choose to do it or not.
Yeah.
But the thing you're describing is another level of abstraction altogether. You have not explicitly gone into your phone and said, hey, I'm commuting. What's going on with the commute? You know, it knows that you do that. I mean, you probably at some point configured, you know, your workplace maybe in Google. Maybe you didn't. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But you probably at some point configured your home. But it knows that you've been to that station and it knows that you do that, you know, on a really regular basis and at a certain time of day. And it has popped up like the intelligent insistent it is to warn you of something, right? It's super useful. But it's also really weird because I don't think you or anyone else would ever be able to ID the time that you said it was okay to do the thing that led to this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I never told it. I've never looked. And it's so funny because this, the Android phone that I use, I really, and I'm trying to get back into it, but this has become my phone. My work phone has become my personal phone essentially. And I don't ever really look up the train schedule because I know what time, like, it's a subway. It shows up when it shows up. But Google, my phone in the last month that I've been using regularly again, knows now that I leave my office at 4:45 and I'm downstairs at the Lexington, the Lex and 54th train station in the city. And it knows that I'm going to try to make it to the 514 Long Island Railroad. It was pleasantly creepy.
Intrusive.
Yeah.
No, it's super useful. I mean, but it. I assume you had the same reaction I think most people would have, which is like, wow, that's really useful. Wow, that's really creepy. You know? I mean, it's the weird relationship we have with Google.
Yeah. It's, and we're okay with it, I guess, right? For the most part.
Yeah,
because we put up with it.
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, I sort of feel, you know, it's funny. Scott McNeely back in the 1990s, I think, said, you know, your privacy is over. Get used to it. Something to that effect. He was a little ahead of the curve on that stuff. But
and look where we're now with Facebook doing a Senate hearing and.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of conditioned, thanks to Microsoft in part, by the way, to not reading license agreements, you know, that we are giving our life away and we're like, yep, we just kind of check the stuff. And this is a particular problem with internet services because in many cases, you're the product, right? The thing you're okaying away is the thing where they say, hey, we're going to mine your data. You know, or you go down an Android phone, you've seen this, you know, you have to click through like 13 authorization dialogues because it needs to use every sensor on your phone and know your exact location and, you know, whatever the other permissions are. It's a different thing. You know, back in, you know, Microsoft ran the world, the reason there was a license agreement was just a legal precaution, you know, to remind you that you don't actually own this software, by the way, and we can't be held liable if anything bad happens. And it wasn't about, by the way, we're going to steal all your personal data and sell it to some company in China. They were never going to do that. But that's what that stuff has turned into, because that's what these new businesses are doing or something like it.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because, you know, with the whole Facebook thing that's happening, and I don't want to get political about it because I think both sides have no understanding of how technology works when you look at government. But it was embarrassing. You hear those questions that are being asked, and it's utterly embarrassing that people have no concept of how technology works, but that's how reality is. And, you know, I hear the conversations from people that, you know, relatives of mine, and they're like, you believe it? Facebook gets all your information? I go, well, here's the thing. You're choosing to go on the service, and you're giving it the information for the most part. You're telling it, you know, what you ate, and you're posting the photos. And,
you know,
live a very different life, though. We're both, and I just want to say that we're public with our lives to some extent. I like to keep my Facebook a little closed. And I like to keep it to people that I know. And I use Twitter very differently. I use Instagram very differently. But I know what I'm getting myself into. Well, I don't think people do. You know,
Facebook is interesting. I mean, obviously, there's been all this uproar over Cambridge Analytics or whatever. You know, Cambridge Analytics or whatever the thing was that popped up is one of those things you see on Facebook where it says, you know, it's like, you know, play the game so you can see what happened on your birthday or whatever. And what you're really doing is giving those people data, right? And so when you click through that, you have to agree to all this stuff. And that's the thing you should be looking at that, I don't mean you, that anyone should be looking at and isn't looking at, right? And that's what happened with Cambridge Analytica, if I'm saying the name right. It wasn't Facebook. They didn't sign a deal with Facebook and Facebook handed over our data. They had to go out to users and get the data, and the users had to say it was okay.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. We stop paying attention, you know? So I looked at, like a lot of people did, I don't know if you did this, but you can download your Facebook data. And, it was not all that interesting. You know, I mean, there was a nostalgic nature to the photos and things, right? I could go back to my first post and see what was going on back then, back in, I think it was 2008. Pictures of my kids at various times in their lives. Yeah, that was kind of cool. But, you know, I've read all these kind of sensational articles where they're like, oh, I downloaded my data from Facebook. You're never going to believe what I found out. And it's like, what you found out was that you clicked on ads because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And what I found out is that they're tailoring ads to me based on interests that have to do with things like traveling. And I don't remember what it was. It was nothing particularly interesting, frankly. I mean,
I'm gonna download mine now. I didn't do it.
Yeah, it's worth looking at. You get this kind of, let me see if I don't think I even saved it. It was too big. It was like a gigabyte. I don't think I wanted to save it. Wait, do I have it? Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I do have it. So you get this set of pages and, you know, there's the events, the pokes, the messages, you know, your friends list. The friends thing was kind of interesting because you've got your current friends, but you also see the people that you got rid of, which is kind of interesting to be confronted with. Photos and videos, obviously, timeline. But I think the thing that people are freaking out over is like the advertising part, right? And so you can see the ad topics, like what does Paul get? You know, photography, travel, smartphones, New England Patriots, Red Sox Nation.
Ugh.
Democracy. I don't know. Stuff like that. Paul, okay.
Wait a minute. You're into democracy?
You know, what a dick. So a lot of music stuff, which is interesting. I think it might be because I've been to music events and taken photos or something. Concerts, computers, yeah. Sports, you know, whatever. The ad history, right, which is stuff like, and some of these, a lot of these I can't explain. Some of this I think is cross-referenced from Instagram. But Care for Your Mouth, I clicked on that ad. I don't know what. These are the ones I clicked on. So e-bags. Right. Professional laptop, backpack, five things that people with tidy homes don't do. The 15-minute retirement plan. You can see that's worked out for me. Great.
Yeah.
I don't know what some of these things are. Away, Everlane, the secret to learning a new language. 25 okay. best places to retire. Clearly, I've got retirement on my head. Official trailer for something. It's probably some movie, I guess. Pickpocket proof travel shirt.
Why?
And then something called. I don't know. Forrest and Harold.
Does it tell you when you did this?
Yeah, actually it does. Actually, these are all from, I didn't click on these are all like from this year. That doesn't even make sense.
That's interesting, right?
Yeah. And then they also have advertisers who uploaded a contact list with your information.
That's fascinating.
There's a lot of them. Yeah. And it's stuff, you know, like Bed Bath & Beyond that I don't shop at. Barclay Card US, I do have a credit card. KLM, Amazon, Jiffy Lube, Live. Oh, that's the a stadium I saw a concert at. The Cult, which I assume is the band.
The band?
Which I don't, I guess, I don't know. I don't know anything. I mean, I don't follow the Cult or I don't even think they're still a band. Anyway, Shutterfly, Gillette, Udacity, which is an online learning thing. Amazon, Verizon, Travelzoo, EA Sports. There's a bunch. It goes on and on. And Consumer Reports, you know, whatever. I don't know. So I think this is maybe the one part of this, if you're worried about privacy, like you would kind of look at. But I don't know. It doesn't seem.
It's bizarre.
You can see which applications you installed. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't.
Well, you know, who has more information like about you and sells it? Is it Google or is it Facebook? You know, now this raises a different question.
Yeah.
Who knows more?
Yeah, Google does.
Yeah.
I think we've established that. You know, Facebook is not going to give you a warning about a subway, you know, whatever.
No.
Google, here's what Facebook warns you about. This is, think about it. What the heads up you get from Facebook. Hey, it's Bob's birthday today. You might want to wish him a happy birthday.
Yeah, pretty much.
Seriously. No, I mean, think about it. That's the depth. I mean, it's just about relationships. And the reason people are, you know, freaking over Facebook. I don't mean to completely exonerate them. I mean, they're terrible. Facebook is terrible in many ways, but a lot of it is just people not paying attention, you know, the users. And I think we're farming out the responsibility here a little bit. And I stay with it because as terrible as Facebook is, that's where my friends and family are. And I am not going to abandon that because I like knowing when cousins I don't see very often are doing things and their little kids are growing up or whatever it is. And I think that's important. And isn't that the point of this social network? It seems like it is.
No, it's. I think it's an important part in you know, human contact at this level. You know, I see things and I talk to people that I haven't spoken to in years. You know, people having kids, people getting married, people getting divorced. You know, you see all this, and it's interesting. It's a very new and different way of communicating and still in its infancy. You know, we're still very immature with the way that we use these social media platforms, social networking platforms. Oh, for sure.
The biggest frustration I have, possibly in life, by the way, is the sheer number of ways that the people I have to interact with, either because they're friends, family, or coworkers, have to reach out to me, right? And so on my computer, I have Skype and now Teams. There's Facebook Messenger as well as regular Messenger. A lot of people use different chat apps and so forth. When we've been on business trips to Europe, they've used, I don't know if it's WhatsApp or one of those apps, for some reason, instead of just using the thing we already all have. You know, like when we were eating lunch, you know, my wife and I have like 30, we have like 30 minutes. We grind out like one of those House Hunter shows just so we can hit ourselves for the rest of the afternoon. And during today's show, three times I was interrupted. One was by a call on Skype/Teams. I don't remember which one it was. It was happening on multiple devices. One was a phone call that's just a spam call. And then the last one, which was particularly aggravating, it was someone actually came to the door.
Oh my God.
And like, that happens so infrequently. You're like, is there like a person at the house? Like, can that even happen?
You know, turn the lights off. You hide under a table. Yeah, now.
Like looking out like that, you know,
who is like, that? Why? Why are they here? It's
like, let me get on the phone. Let me text the police.
It's amazing.
It's weird.
Yeah. I do want to take a moment and talk about our sponsor, and that's Slack, where work happens. Find out why at slack.com. I use Slack at work, actually. I brought it to work. And the reason why I did this is because I really believe in strong communication amongst different departments. And you start seeing it, you know, if your employer is like this and you have a marketing team and a sales team, you know, sometimes communication gets lost and there's certain conversations that happen in one department that would include another one, but you just haven't gotten around to doing it. Slack makes it super easy to collaborate because it's a collaboration hub that lets you organize your team's work into channels where everyone is included. Relative information can be placed in one group, and then new teams can be added depending on, you know, if you want to add them or remove them. And it's super fast. You can share documents, images, all types of different information amongst all different types of, you know, chats, essentially, that you set up. It's an easy-to-use app. You could have it on your phone. You could do it on the desktop. You have over 1,000 applications that you could integrate, like Salesforce, Zendesk, Google Drive. I actually do it to share promotional imaging that we have, which is great. You also have real-time chat, video, and voice calling, group file sharing, and searchable archives that makes it super easy. For more information, go to slack.com. Let them know that we sent you. I really like the service. And I personally use it, by the way, iOS, Android, sync seamlessly as well. Slack.com, where work happens. Yeah, you know, to kind of touch on this privacy thing, you know, I tell this story all the time. And you know, I get people that message me like, you know what, Andrew, this happened to me also. And then I got people that argue with me and tell me that I'm crazy that this happened. I'm sitting at a bar, which is how all my stories begin. And yep. I'm having a conversation.
Andrew walks into a bar.
I'm having a conversation with Spencer, the host of The Bald Truth, and we're talking about bone broth. Okay, what a bizarre thing to have a conversation about, right? Bone broth and how healthy it is for you. What do I know? About 2 hours later, I go on my phone and there's a bone broth ad. I did not look it up on my phone. I've never looked up bone broth. It was a voice conversation.
Right. This is the kind of thing I was talking about. This is the. I feel like we've all experienced what you just described.
It was a Facebook ad, by the way, a Facebook ad.
Yeah. So another, right. So the theory here is it's like listening to you, right? I mean, and I think that it's, I can't explain what happened to you. I literally believe that Facebook has a little agent on your phone listening to conversations through the microphone? No, but is it possible that during this conversation, because, you know, this is what people do now when they converse, you want to look up a little data point about bone broth and you did a little search?
I did not do any search. That's the thing. Okay. That's the thing that drives me nuts. I never searched for it, ever. Now, maybe I did have Facebook open, maybe.
My wife and I have, this has happened to us. Like, we've had this conversation. Like, we talked about something and then we got an ad about that thing. That's messed up. Yeah.
I understand up. Searching, right? Because that's mined constantly. But I understand about searching, Paul. But I probably, what I'm thinking is I had the Facebook app open. And when you have the Facebook app open and I'm talking, maybe it heard the bone broth conversation.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
or it was a freak coincidence, a one in a million shot that I happen to get a bone broth in 2 hours. I think you're going to
discover that many people have had this freak coincidence. And
yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. And noticed it,
you know?
It's fascinating.
Yeah. I can't think of the one that happened to my wife and I, but I know I discussed it somewhere here at whatever other podcast at the time. And it's, you know, it's weird. It's weird. Really weird when this kind of thing happens.
Yeah. I did want to take a minute and talk about before we wrap up. By the way, you could do the post show today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. I want to talk about Redstone 5 and a feature that I'm looking forward to. And that's the sets feature. I'm big on tabs. I don't know if you know that. Is this going to be the prime, like a major shift? Because I know it was in Redstone 4 and was taken away. Do we know if this is a finalized thing for Redstone 5?
Finalized thing?
Is it 100% going to be in Redstone 5?
I don't think it's fair to say anything is 100% anything. I mean, it's in the builds. It has been improved at least twice since they re-added it. I do expect it to make it into RS5.
Yeah. What do you think of it? Do you like it?
So I'm not running RS5. The closest I've done to using this feature is to use that Stardock utility that basically adds the same functionality. The implementation details are kind of interesting because, like, how do I say this quickly or easily? There's a multitasking thing that occurs. We have muscle memory, right? And so if you have multiple windows open on your screen, you can kind of alt-tab, and you get between them, and it works really well. If you get an application like Chrome or Edge or whatever browser where you have multiple tabs, those aren't part of alt-tab anymore, right? So alt-tab comes up, and then you get the window with all the tabs, and then you do control-tab to move between all of those tabs. Okay, fine. This was one of those things that works really well in Windows. If you switch to the Mac, what you're going to discover is that those keyboard combinations, like, and it would be option and whatever the key is, don't work the same for some reason. If you have multiple Chrome windows open with multiple tabs in each, you can't alt tab between the windows. It's kind of goofy. There is another harder keyboard shortcut I never learned that makes it happen. But the point of this is that once you add another layer of multitasking to anything, it gets a little more difficult. So when Microsoft first did sets, I believe they were going to rely on like a control tab motion to get through the tabs, which to me makes sense. But I think what happened was you get that feature out in front of normal people and they're confused because they can't get between these applications anymore. They don't know control tab. So my understanding is they've changed it back to alt tab. So if you have a window with five apps on tabs, you can actually use alt tab to go between each of those apps, even though they're inside tabs.
Yeah.
Is that the right way to do it? I don't know. I haven't used it, but it's kind of an interesting dilemma because you have to make it, you know, workable.
I've used add-ons that do this, like the one that you were bringing up. I don't know. A couple of years ago, actually. What, like a year and a half ago, I used it. And it was fine. Right. I liked it. And I like that they're incorporating this because, you know, the way that we use it, we have a lot of things open, essentially, when we use these computers now. Nobody's really doing one thing unless you're on an iPod. An iPod. Jesus Christ, I'm losing my mind. Yeah, you are doing one thing on an iPod, an iPad.
That's true.
I'm curious to see how this is implemented and how well it works. Is there any major standout other than this that you like in Redstone 5?
No, not yet. But they're not going to really say too much about what's coming until build anyway. So the stuff we're seeing now is just early. They got sets in there because it was originally going to be part of, or could possibly have been part of RS4. So it was kind of ready to go. That's why we're seeing that now. But that's the only big one we know about so far.
Yeah, interesting. Guys, if you're watching this, stay tuned. We're going to do our bonus show where Paul and I talk about virtually anything. We just go into a deep conversation for 15 minutes, and then I say, I got to go, and we leave. If you're watching this live, stay tuned. You can watch it with us. If not, fund us. Help us out. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us as little as $1. And you can fund us continuing to do this. We've been doing it for a number of years now. So it's always a great help from you. For all things Paul, go to Therot.com. Go join Therot Premium. A lot of great articles there. I'm a big fan of Therot Premium. I'm a premium member. I'm number 23, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. Guys, that's it for this week. We'll see you all later.